Everyone is talking about the future of work, Doing Our Homework, a podcast produced by USM.
If in the future machines would take over all the unpleasant work, what new jobs would we have? Are we ready for a life without work? And what role would empathy and routine play in a scenario like this? These are the questions we ponder on in the third episode of our podcast, Doing Our Homework. We're here at the USM Workhouse near Berlin with a group of young designers, artists, architects, economists, and thinkers. I'm Sarah Elsing, and I'm very curious what kind of new jobs are waiting for us in the future.
Hi, guys. Choose one of these. You can just grab some pieces from this bag. Doesn't matter which.
One or two.
Take some here.
So let's sneak into the first PlayLab session, where they play with Lego minifigs and invent jobs they could have in 20 years from now.
In terms of roles, we're thinking that there may be a full circle return to more hands-on labour, but a job that could be done at a desk, but adapting it so that you could have a physical way to do that role rather than just using a computer. So we're thinking of someone who harvests data. So we've got a guy here with a spade and a bucket or a little carry thing, and they would perhaps be using that to physically sift through data in a more hands-on, tactile way.
Maybe. I just had an idea, actually. What about if they're both kind of clean-up guys?
Oh, okay, yeah.
But this one maybe is actually the data one. He's got some electronics on his chest,
yeah,
and
so
maybe he can...
wearable technology, yeah.
Yeah, okay, he's sort of strapped into data sets that are coming in, and he needs to kind of sift out stuff that's anomalies or not useful. Maybe this guy is actually also a cleaner upper guy, but this is more physical. Maybe it's to do with plastics, or maybe in the future we've really degraded the environment and there's a need to preserve or even really search for parts that are going to be useful for us.
One way to entertain ourselves in a future without work is to do yoga. And of course, at the PlayLab in the USM Workhouse, there's yoga every morning. And I sit here on the mat with Bernhard König, an architect, right after yoga class. How do you feel, Bernhard?
Kind of free. And I took a deep breath. And it's so connected to nature at the moment. It's amazing.
Amazing. Very relaxed in the body, stretched.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of doubt if I would go to work now or stay a bit like this. Yeah.
And I see you're wearing the perfect t-shirt for yoga. It says breath time. So why do you think breathing is so important?
Breathing is important because it connects the inner of our body with everything around us, so with nature, with our neighbors. And this air and breathing, we are all the same. We are all connected. We do breathe all the same air. Worldwide.
You started out as an architect, right? You worked for famous offices like Herzog de Meuron, right? But now you're concentrated on getting more green into the city. Why do you think there was this change in your career?
I think it has a lot to do with seeing the space as something that's constantly changing. And nature helps us a lot, kind of moderating this, creating comfort situation also.
And can you explain or describe maybe what you're doing with your company? It's called Green for Cities. What do you do there?
Well, we see ourselves as ecosystem engineers. So we do try to analyze existing situations, but then enhance fostering ecosystems, ecosystemic performance. Yeah, looking kind of how green, how also kind of blue infrastructure can help to moderate our climate, can help to create comfort situation, or even designing complete indoor-outdoor ecosystems as potentially incredible spaces to live and work for the future.
What do you think we can learn from plants?
There's a schedule. There's an annual schedule or daily schedule kind of. Plants in nature has got a really strong, unchangeable schedule. So that's something that's really important to go back to these potentially archaic rhythms. It's all this interaction because ecosystems do interact all the time. constantly. You know, they don't kind of fight against each other. They just do react to their own needs, to the needs of others, and they do the best out of it.
Talking about cycles or routines, why do you think routines are important for us as humans?
I even started doubting it, but since I do have kids, I do see kind of how important routines are for the well-being of people, of also for the safety. You know, if you're living in a constantly changing world, these kind of routines quite often the most important thing to follow. Leave your time and everything is much more relaxed, much more happy, empathic.
Yeah. And maybe we can take for the last cycle, for the last routine, take a deep breath. Deep inhale. Oh, exhale. Thank you very much. This morning, every group of two played with these little Lego minifigs, right? And explored what kind of jobs they would have in the future. And I'm very glad we are here with Jacob Liesenfeld, who is the art director at Lego. Welcome.
Hi.
I was wondering, why is repetition seen so badly in our times?
I think it has to do with the way, you know, you want to be fresh, especially in design. And it's unprecedented in the way you are exposed to all those different designs around you. Any execution, any product, any service, you probably think, I've seen that somewhere, because you have. You know, you're exposed to a lot, you see a lot of patterns. That's human nature, that you immediately recognize patterns. So we get excited when there's something fresh.
But without repetition, no learning, right?
Yes. I mean, that's the other thing, of course, that part of what was my job at Lego Star Wars, for instance, was very much how to keep this highly successful line going. How to innovate each and every product cycle, so to speak, how to make a super exciting product and portfolio of products without actually ruining the chance to still one-up it next year.
One might even say Lego is maybe also a very repetitive game, because you only have this one single kind of brick, right? And there's no limit on what you can build with that one brick. But some creators say they need a certain framework or a structure to channel their creativity, to eventually come up with an output. So do we need limits or routines to work or be creative?
Well, there's the definition of creativity as problem solving. That's what generates a lot of, you know, the feeling of success, that you actually solve a problem. And I would very much say that's the distinction between design and art. You're actually turning the limitations into a, you know, an outcome, rather than it can be daunting to be in front of a white, you know, blank space, having no limit whatsoever. So I would say definitely you need certain limitations. I think the best stuff comes from that. The most iconic things come from that. But with routines, it's a little bit different.
One scenario is that all the machines take over the boring jobs. So there is a lot of free time, I think, for us. Do you think then we have more time to play?
Yeah. Well, hopefully. We should take all the time we need to play anyways, because that's actually, you know, it's no accident. If you just look around, there's this awareness. Children are learning by playing, of course. You know, you don't have to force a child to learn. This is what they like to do. We just need to take care to not switch this off at some point in our education as we grow up and forget that it's actually, there's a reason why this is fun.
This is also why this workshop is called not a workshop, but a play lab. So a mix between experiment, play, and maybe academic work even. Does it really feel like working and being productive, what you're doing today?
Well, absolutely. I always liked going from the very, you know, early stages of conception and having conceptualizing an idea, a process, whatever is the task at hand, all the way to the final production and having a final product, the more tangible, the better, in your hands. But along those steps, you'll find in your working environment, you know, where do you really find you created the value? Maybe you had a meeting and, you know, you just decided on something and you feel a huge sense of accomplishment, because You don't actually implement anything, but you actually had the breakthrough right there. You felt this was the most valuable part, to just agree, get a few people to agree to a vision, for instance.
How can we invite more playfulness into our work or the everyday life?
Well, I think just giving to your child, your inner child, you know. There was a guy at Lego who said, the day you stop playing is the day you get ready to die. So
that's great.
You might not be as drastic, but let's be honest, you know, humor, creativity, play, they're all connected. If you look at a happy child playing, you might be a bit jealous, but you know, it's easy to have this. Just let yourself go a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think in everyday life, it could be the way you interact with your colleagues, the way you take your breaks. I don't know, even the way you approach your serious work. Mm-hmm. I like to make a joke every once in a while. That helps a lot, I feel. Actually stimulates the mind.
Yeah, wonderful. So having said this, I'll let you go to play more with your colleagues. Thank you so much. We already heard from an architect what we can learn from plants and ecosystems, especially how important breath and breaks are in our cycles. Now we're here with Harriet Middleton Baker, a visual artist who works with performance, research and dance. Hello.
Hi.
So tell us, what can we learn from art then for the future of work?
I think art plays a really important role because it already blurs the boundaries between leisure and work as its own entity. So it's a role that already is very blurry in terms of its structure. So it could be kind of almost like a case study for adaptation for other jobs, maybe. And also it allows for a lot of play. It's, you know, a large part of it is just very playful. And it's not necessarily based on kind of defined goals or defined productivity. So I think that's an interesting model to think about as well.
So it's the playfulness, but also music and art is said to be a direct gateway to your emotions or your soul even. Does art make us more empathetic?
I think so, yeah. There's something that I really care about, which is storytelling and how we can use stories to empathize, like you said, as well as learn from people other than ourselves and other than our like immediate surroundings. So yeah, I think it's really, really important. And I think it's something that we need to encourage.
So more playfulness and more empathy in the world. This is what's going to save us in the future?
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. I mean, finding the kind of ability to share with each other our different experiences, finding those common places, wherever they may be. They don't have to be in an art gallery or anything like that. It could be anywhere. Yeah, and however you might share.
In a workplace, maybe even.
Yes, maybe in a workplace, or a workplace might not look like a workplace is today, you know. They're all kind of merge into these kind of quite fluid spaces, I think, in the future. So hopefully there'll be a kind of encouragement to not have play as a separate entity. Yeah, it'll become something kind of fundamental to daily life.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
We ask our community on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, are we ready for a life without work? On Twitter, somebody wrote, it's called unemployment. It's not great. But is that true? Let's hear what our experts say here in the workhouse.
A life without work. No, I think all human activity is work. I think that the minute we don't have purpose, feel empty and shallow, and that we start to kind of flounder as beings. So I think it's about redefining what we mean by work and trying to question the relationship between work as a job where you're employed and you earn money in exchange for what you do, and work as personal value and social community value.
Yeah, I think it's not that we're facing this no work future, it's that we're facing a redefined work future, where we're doing different things for different reasons. And in that way, we're totally resilient to these kinds of scary myths of like fully autonomous production where we don't have anything left to do. We'll just be doing more social stuff or local thinking-based stuff.
I would say right now we're probably not ready for a future without work. I don't think if people lost their jobs tomorrow, they would know what to do productively with their time. But we would really need to reconfigure the education system we have now so that it's not so cut up into blocks where you kind of finish your education at 18 and then go into the working world and there you are on your own. I think it would need to be much more integrated into a kind of cycle of lifelong learning that you would be able to retrain
throughout your life and adapt to maybe changing societal needs.
Although I believe on one hand in the future it will be good to have more leisure time, I think you will still need a sense of accomplishment with that time, and I think work helps fulfill that role. It may just shift into focusing on the family maybe, or keeping ourselves, you know, fed and watered and those kind of things, but I think maybe the definition of work will change, but we will still need work in some capacity.
Wow, these are quite some interesting scenarios, but are they likely? I'm here with Francis Tsong, who is teaching at New School in New York. You're an expert in forecasting and simulation. How do you see the future of work?
I guess the way the trends are going right now, we see the kind of prevalence of this so-called gig economy. A lot of people kind of working for these platforms like Uber or these other kind of delivery platforms. That seems like a trend that'll continue. We may see that go into more and more different service areas. In terms of what I would hope to see, I would hope to see something not like that. I know some people have proposed ways of making these kind of platforms like Uber cooperatively owned, so that the drivers, for instance, have a much more direct say in how resources are allocated, or they're paid more fairly and that sort of thing. So,
okay, but you're also an expert in game design and machine learning, right? So what can we as humans maybe learn from machines?
That's also a really good question. I think one of the really interesting things that we might see from machine learning or AI more broadly is that the way it may learn about the world could be very different than the way we come to learn about it. There's this theorem called the ugly duckling theorem that I think about a lot when this kind of question comes up. And basically it says that if you take like a duck and a swan, you could list out all the things that are the same about them and all the things that are different about them. As people, we've kind of learned that some of these differences, like the feather color, are more important than other differences. So we value that difference of feather color more than we do the similarity of their size, for instance. But to a machine, for instance, it doesn't necessarily know what differences and what similarities are important, so it may come to actually group those two together or something like that. So I think in that case, machine learning or AI could very much give us a quite literally a different way of looking at the world or categorizing things in the world.
Yeah. Wow, that's very interesting. But the other way around, one thing that is very specific about the human is that it has emotions, right? We have emotions and we have empathy. How can we teach machines to be empathic?
I think to kind of have a good answer for that, you kind of have to figure out what makes humans empathetic. And we're kind of wired to be that way. We have like mirror neurons, which in a very real sense, like if we see someone in pain, we sort of internalize some of that as well. And so that's a big component of what compels us to be empathetic. It would have to be something like that, I think, where it kind of identifies with people.
And why do you think we need empathy in the future?
That's sort of what keeps us together, I think. I don't see any other way that humanity could continue to exist. I think that's sort of what is a defining feature of any sort of social organism.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
After a long, fun day of work and play at the USM Workhouse, what are our findings? Bernhard König, the green architect, explained what we can learn from plants. For example, to think in longer cycles, evolve in organic patterns, and to take a deep breath from time to time. Jakob Liesenfeld from LEGO reminded us to stay in contact with our inner child and immerse ourselves in playfulness. And game designer Francis Chang revealed what machines can teach us about thinking outside of the box and how we can teach them to be more empathetic. So let's do this. Stay in touch, start a conversation, and shape the future of work together. My name is Sarah Elsing. Thank you for listening.
Doing Our Homework, a podcast about the future of work. For more information, please visit our website, homework.usm.com.